Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here at the May 30th meeting of the Joint Committee on Marijuana Regulation. We have four bills that we are going to be considering tonight, and the first two are going to be public hearings. So we're going to start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 56. And in fact, what that's going to entail is a public hearing on some amendments, which are kind of the live portions of that bill right now. And I'm going to invite Adam Crawford to give us a brief orientation, then have Mark Mayer come forward and describe where we're at.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we first heard Senate Bill 56 previously on May 23rd. We have Deputy Counsel Mark Mayer here to discuss the amendments.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel, here to go over briefly the dash 27, 28, 29, and 32 amendments to Senate Bill 56. I'm going to start with the 27s. Everything in the dash 27s this committee has seen before. It takes a variety of concepts that were presented last week, and it includes them in one amendment. The first concept is immediate suspension of licenses by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission for diversion into the black market. The second concept that is included is local government verification of lawful activity. If you remember this amendment, it contained the phrase telephone hotline, allowing counties and cities to call both the Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon Liquor Control Commission quickly. Processing by small producers. This amendment was a concept where a producer could engage in certain types of processing, specifically mechanical processing or the use of water as a solvent, without having to get a processing license by the commission. Retention of consumer information. This is a technical fix to a bill that this committee passed out of committee earlier this session and that has been signed by the governor into law, Senate Bill 863. Upon looking at the language, Liquor Control Commission determined that it would prevent something that is currently allowed by law, which is the delivery of marijuana items directly from a retailer to a consumer. Not because that is not that was the substantive choice this committee made, but because they wouldn't be able to retain the information, therefore wouldn't be able to make the deliveries. So this clarifies that. So that's Senate Bill 56-27s. The other amendments, very briefly, the dash 28s. Earlier in this session, this committee passed out of committee Senate Bill 1057. That bill has also been signed into law by the governor. That established immature plant limits for medical marijuana grow sites. There are some variations on that concept in some of the amendments you're going to be looking at today for other bills. But the problem or the issue that this attempts to resolve is there are medical marijuana grow sites that are trying to transition into the OLCC system. And that requires them to have a different type, that requires them to be under a different type of imposition for immature marijuana plants. So what this says is basically as long as they are applying for a license until that license is issued or denied, then those immature plant limits do not apply to them.
Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
I just want to elaborate. We had a brief meeting today with OLCC, and the dash 28 amendment will receive a small tweak because it doesn't cover people who withdraw from the licensing process for some reason. So it will have a different number.
Senator Burdick, I've already discussed that with the commission and know how to further amend it.
Thank you.
Senate Bill 56, the dash 29s. If you remember correctly, last week we went over a concept in quite some detail about Indian tribes receiving refunds on the basis of product that they sell in Oregon through OLCC licensed retail stores that carries the product that they've processed or produced on tribal land. Very complicated amendment. This amendment, following a work group, basically really reduces it to a more simplistic framework where the Department of Revenue is going to be able to enter into an agreement to provide rebates to fulfill this purpose. The amendment isn't specific as to how the rebate exactly may be done, and I know Department of Revenue is going to probably come up and talk about different options for that. And it doesn't get into a lot of the details about how it's going to be executed, but what the amendment does do is it says who can get the rebate, which is a Indian tribe that's entered into a compact with this state for the cross-jurisdictional regulation of marijuana, and it says what type of product they can get the rebate for. So that's the Dash 29. It's a little bit simpler take on what we talked about last week.
Madam
Chair,
please. If I can clarify this one, too, the Dash 29s will be subject to public hearing tonight, and I'd like comments on those if anybody has any. But the intention is to move that area of the tribal taxation into a separate bill that would be a House bill. Given that it deals with taxation, it's a cleaner way to handle it. But testimony on the Dash 29s is relevant tonight because when we consider the House bill, it will be a public hearing and work session the same day. So we want to get any public input before then.
And Chair Bird, if I may elaborate, the correlative amendment to House Bill 2197, I believe, is the Dash 1s, and I think those are on OLIS.
Right. So the new vehicle will be House Bill 2197.
Right, and it actually has to go in there because if this committee moves Dash 28s into this particular bill, it has an E clause, and so we have to move this with a 91-day clause into a different bill.
So that means bills regarding taxation cannot have emergency clauses on them, and since other elements of the Senate Bill 56 will have an emergency clause, we need to do something that relates to taxation in a separate bill vehicle.
And then finally, the Dash 32s. What these amendments do is they build off a concept that this committee has seen earlier, whereby the fees that are imposed underneath Senate Bill 1057 on marijuana grow sites. An earlier amendment basically took that and said those fees cannot be more than double that which they currently pay for their annual registration. So if their annual registration is $100, this would put a cap at $200. And then that amendment also said, as does this one, said any funds that are needed in excess of that will be imposed on recreational licensees, and those will be used to make up the cost of the tracking. This particular concept, the Dash 32s, add two more elements to that past amendment. The first is that these particular fees cannot be imposed on patients who are growing for themselves, for their grow sites. They can only be imposed on persons designated to produce marijuana by a registered identification card holder. And finally, these amendments cannot be imposed on a marijuana grow site that is growing for a patient card holder who is eligible for reduced fees underneath both statute and law until January 1, 2020. So are there any questions?
Have a question.
I have a question for the co-chairs, but not this year.
Sure, go ahead.
So it sounds like we're going to have another bill that we're going to potentially deal with taxation or some tax issues. Would the co-chairs be willing to consider the issue that was raised about whether we should be taxing the seeds that are being sold retail? I've heard from a number of people throughout the year as to whether that should be something. I've got numbers for from Department of Revenue as to what they anticipate the impact would be. But if we're going to, if the co-chairs are willing to kind of look at this, then I'll try to get something drafted so it can be on the table.
So I think that is an increase, right? That would be
it would be a decrease.
Tax?
It would be decreasing.
Are they being taxed now?
Yes. If you go in and buy a seed at a retail operation, you pay the tax. And it seems kind of ironic that we're taxing people to get something into the ground that they're going to be taxed upon when it's sold.
I think I would be open to looking at that.
Okay.
I think the version of the tribal amendment that is set forth in the dash 29 is not an increase, so it doesn't require supermajority. So I'm hearing you say
this would actually,
your idea similarly does not require supermajority. So I would be open to seeing a draft of that. I think it's important for us all to be thinking about the fact that we're really close to the end of probably the life of this committee. But, you know, Co-Chair Burdick, do you want
to
make a comment?
Yeah, I'd like to take a look at it. I want to make sure that nothing weights down the Indian tax
exactly.
issue.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Any questions, comments on the amendments that Mr. Mayor has discussed for Senate Bill 56? Okay, we have a few people. Thank you. We have a few people signed up for testimony on Senate Bill 56, six people. And let's start by inviting forward Melissa Cunningham of the Oregon Department of Justice on behalf of the Department of Revenue, who may be able to speak to any concerns related to the 29 amendment or any of the complexities related to that important amendment, which will of course be housed in House Bill 2197, not this bill, but this is our opportunity to talk through the agreed upon resolution of how to deal with the tribal tax issue. Welcome, Ms. Cunningham. Please state your name for the record and let us know what you're thinking.
Co-Chairs Leininger and Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Melise Cunningham. I'm an attorney with the Oregon Department of Justice, and I'm here on behalf of the Department of Revenue. I know also that Michael Mason, who's a tribal representative,
Mr. Mason, would you like to come forward? I see that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Co-chairs, members of the committee, on behalf of the Department of Revenue, the Department of Revenue is neutral on the policy, obviously, that this amendment represents, but wanted to let the committee know that it believes that this dash 29 amendment is administrable and reflects the understanding and agreement that the parties reached in our work group late last week. And just wanted to let you know that. I'm happy to take questions if the committee has them.
Thank you so much. Any questions for this witness? I want to thank Senator Ferrioli for helping pull that together. And Mr. Mason, it sounds like, of course, you and the tribal representatives were there, and Ms. Cunningham, and I think perhaps others in the room were also there. So thank you, Mr. Bovet, possibly. Thanks. What would you like to say today, Mr. Mason?
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, and members of the Joint Marijuana Regulation Committee. My name is Michael Mason. I'm here on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon. And I don't have a lot to say. The tribes, you know, we've had some review of the dash 29s, and they do reflect the discussion and the agreement I thought occurred in the work group on Friday morning. And we do want to thank Senator Ferrioli profusely for pulling that together and helping keep this from being put off in a way that would discourage private investors and partners who are already nervous about another attorney general, but nervous about the idea of multiple taxation and the impact that could have on profit. So in this new arena, particularly for tribes. So we are in support of the dash 29s, understanding they're not going to be the dash 29s on Senate Bill 56, but we are in support of those, and I'm happy to try to answer questions, though I have to say I am not knowledgeable on the subject of marijuana.
All right, let the record reflect.
You're in the wrong committee, Manny.
I'm
all
more
right.
of an Indian law generalist, thank you.
any questions for either of these good people? All right, thank you so much for being here. We have next up Michelle White, Vince Porter, and Mike Rocklin. And then final witness for this panel is Mr. Pete Kramer. Then we're going to move into the Senate Bill 307, which is the social consumption bill. And just so that people have a sense of context, we have I think 8 witnesses signed up for that. And then after that, we're going to move into work sessions on 2 other bills. Let's go ahead in any order. Please begin by stating your name for the record.
Hi, I'm Michelle White.
And then you can go ahead with your testimony.
Great. Good evening. So I'm Michelle White. I'm with Empower Body Care, and we are a cannabis-infused topical company. And I'm actually here tonight to speak a little bit more about the amendments 15 and 16 to the bill. And I know Nikki did a little bit of this last week, so I'll keep my comments short, not to take up too much of your time. I wanted to come tonight because I love what I do. Every day I'm told by people how much our products help them with everything from sciatica to psoriasis. They tell us about their grandma's arthritis and their husband's bed sores and how these products really make differences in their lives. So we get to help people relieve their pain every day, and it's amazing. And 2 of the amendments on Senate Bill 56 will affect how we're able to do this with people. The first one is about our ability to give out samples. It's something that we used to do before all of the regulation changes, and we want to hopefully be able to get that ability back. One of the things that does for us and our patients is that it gives them the opportunity to try the products without having to make the large investment to make sure they're going to work for them. So we'd really like to see that reinstated if possible. And the second item is long-term care facilities. So, and this is something that came, up personally recently. We have patients that use it for everything from pain relief, bed sores, bruises, inflammation, all sorts of things. And our products are non-psychoactive, natural, safe, and effective with no side effects. Currently, patients cannot use our topicals in long-term care facilities. And in addition to a lot of the things that they're able to treat with the topicals, we also get reports that a lot of them reduce their opiate use as a result of using the topicals, which seems to be something that would be important in these facilities. Recently, my mother-in-law was in one of these facilities and was not allowed to use her topicals, and as a result, increased her opiate use during that time. So these are some of the things that we would like to take into account when you guys are considering the amendments 15 and 16 on Senate Bill 56. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Chair Leininger, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Vince Porter. I'm right here representing the Oregon Cannabis Association and just wanted to come in support of the Dash 28s. With 1057 now in law, there was a little bit of a bump with several OLCC applicants who had initiated their immature plants under the marijuana on the medical grow rules as was legal. And while they are in the application process, are now in conflict. And so this amendment would simply say those who are making an effort to move into the OLCC system and have already applied would be given a grandfathering or grace period that allows them to continue their business plan as they had set forth and still not be in conflict with the law. So we encourage you and I vote on the Dash 28s. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rothman.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chairs, Joint Committee, Michael Rockland, for the record, appeared before you many times. On 56, I just want to say a couple quick things. I just saw 2 amendments posted today, so I just looked at them, and I did not see anything related to the House Bill 2198 Cannabis Commission concept in anything. So a little concerned about that if for some reason 2198 doesn't pass. So that was my first concern. The second thing is I'm not aware of any formal interagency agreements that have been written so the agencies can cooperatively do what OSHA and Department of Ag do that they've been doing for 10 years, operate effectively without questions. So those are my 2 concerns. So please consider these elements. I think that what I'm after is really helping patients and people that want to consume safely and make sure that the access is safe. And I believe the way to do that is have a fairly neutral oversight for that, which would be the Cannabis Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, we are planning to move the House Bill 2198, or at least vote on whether to move forward with the House Bill 2198 today, and that includes the Cannabis Commission language in it, in the Dash 33 amendment.
So, great. Okay. That'll be great. Thank you.
Any additional comments? Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Mr. Kramer, would you like to come forward?
Yes, ma'am.
Great. And then we're going to move forward with Senate Bill 307 and invite Mark Mayer to give a review of the updated amendment and then work through our list of witnesses. Welcome.
Welcome. Good day, all. My name is Pete Kramer. I'm from Marion County, Kaiser. Let's see. The patients, they're being hurt with regulations and different things that you're doing. You're hurting their growers. They're in a different situation. These are low-income people, handicapped in many different ways, bedridden. Some people are close to their death, and they find that cannabis relieves the pain, relieves their suffering, helps with their quality of life. I say we're being taxed without representation. I mean, from $50 to $200 for grow site registration. That's like when my doctor said, oh, you were at 50, we'll drop you down to 1%. It doesn't add up. The consideration for the patients, what they're going through with the different medications that the doctors are prescribing them with their side effects. Thank you for all this time and listening and didn't kick me out of the place yet. I'll see you next time.
Right. All right, great. Thanks so much.
But have consideration to the patient.
Thank you. All right. Committee members, any more thoughts on Senate Bill 56? All right. Then we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 56. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 307. We have Mr. Mayer describe what the key elements of the -3 amendments are, which are the operative amendments for us to consider tonight.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I think first off, it's important to understand that all the generally applicable laws and rules to all other license types also apply to these smoking venues, including reasonable time, place, and manner, requirement to get a land use compatibility statement, as well as nobody under 21 entering the premises. So the statutes have been updated in order to reflect that. These license types are special in three different ways. First off, they allow for the consumption of marijuana items in designated areas. They disallow the consumption of the following things: alcoholic beverages, tobacco products, and marijuana items that are not inhaled. No inhalants will be allowed on these premises. So no edibles, that is not a part of this concept. And then finally,
Senator Prezlansky, did you want to clarify something?
Would you please restate what you just said, Mark, because it didn't make sense. You said no inhalants, but
only inhalants will be allowed at these premises.
And what are they doing there?
Sorry.
What's the controversy?
My mind is elsewhere. And then finally, they specifically state that these items... They specifically prohibit these items from being inhaled in areas that are subject to the Indoor Clean Air Act, except as permitted by the Indoor Clean Air Act. And I think it's important to understand why this is being placed in the bill itself. Underneath the Indoor Clean Air Act, if you violate it, you're subject to a civil penalty only, a violation. I believe the cap on that is $500. If you violate this section, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission can discipline you using any of its powers, including suspension or revocation of license. So there is a disciplinary reason for including this, even though it seems like it's just restating the law on the surface. The Dash 3 amendments also include the following item in Section 3, page 3, where the Liquor Control Commission may require an applicant for a licensee to get pre-approval from a city or a county that the smoking venue is going to meet all time, place, and manner regulations. Anyone. It lists some specific types of regulations here, including the proximity of the premises to dwelling units, public parks, community centers, child care facilities, and public places. But really, it's any type of reasonable regulation that's going to be adopted with respect to these types of establishments. So that is the Dash 3 amendment in a nutshell. There's a few other technical things I'd be happy to answer questions on, but those are the salient issues, I think.
Committee, anyone have questions, comments, as we launch into witness testimony on this? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And with that, let's invite forward, please, Sam Chapman, Rob Bovette, and Chris McAllister as our first panel. Then we will follow that up with Mike Rockland and Christine Lewis, and then final panel of Stacy Michelson and Rosa Klein, please.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovette appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And I guess my counterparts are suggesting I have to go first, so I'll go first. The chiefs and the sheriffs are opposed to 307 for three basic reasons. One is they think this is the wrong time to be poking at the federal government with something like this when they're scrutinizing us fairly seriously. A second, chiefs and sheriffs are generally in opposition to creating new venues, whatever you want to call them, new venues where people congregate, become impaired, and then drive. We're already struggling to deal with the significant increase in marijuana-impaired DUIs as it is. A third, law enforcement, for better or for worse, is often on the front lines of dealing with NIMBY issues, not in my backyard. They're the ones that get the phone calls, and they see NIMBY written all over this one, in spite of cities and counties' best efforts to try to control those. So for those three reasons, the sheriffs and the chiefs are opposed to this bill.
Madam Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sam Chapman. This will be my third time testifying before you on this bill, and I appreciate the audience, and I believe it remains important to remind everyone on the committee and everyone here that's worked on this bill what exactly this bill does and what it does not do in terms of the Dash 3s. The Senate Bill 307 with the Dash 3s allows for consumption of cannabis in designated areas at licensed venues, as Mark Mayer has mentioned. It empowers local governments to craft time, place, and manner regulations, including now greater restrictions on venues that allow consumption. And it requires state and local licensing for cannabis consumption venues, so licensing. What it does not do, it does not amend the Indoor Clean Air Act. It does not allow cannabis consumption in public. It does not restrict the powers of cities to regulate cannabis to any degree. And it does not allow cannabis to be sold or consumed where alcohol or tobacco is consumed. These are all things I've said before I wanted to repeat again. There's a couple things that I have not noted before that I've compiled specifically for this hearing. Other states and cities have social consumption laws on the books now. We would not be the first to step out on this. The state of California, Maine, and Massachusetts all have, in statute, similar language to Senate Bill 307 in terms of allowing counties to opt in and create and work with the state agencies to develop regulations that their communities see fit. These are all areas in which all stakeholders would come to the table, industry, law enforcement, public health, neighborhood associations, you name it. There are many things that are in Senate Bill 307 that mirror this, including the ways that we want to continue to have conversations moving forward. There are also the Nevada legislature just passed social consumption 21-9. It's sitting in the House right now. And Denver and Oakland are also both cities that have already enacted social consumption language. So again, 307 with the dash 3 is an incremental, pragmatic approach to regulating consumption of legal cannabis by adults in the cities and counties that choose to license spaces for that purpose. We've constantly heard a lot of the arguments for not in my backyard. I wholeheartedly think that this will not be in anyone's backyard who does not want it. That is why it is an opt-in provision that allows incrementalism at the rate at which communities feel comfortable taking it. It does nothing new or exciting. Simply allow Oregon to keep pace with other states in terms of common sense cannabis regulation while preserving the authority of local governments within Oregon to regulate cannabis as they see fit on their timeline. On behalf of all Oregonians who will benefit from this law, including medical cannabis patients and tenants who can't legally use cannabis in their own homes, responsible parents who don't want to subject their children to cannabis, as well as visitors partaking in one of the many craft products that Oregon is proud to call our own, I'd like to personally thank you for your commitment to this important issue and be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the tremendous amount of work and leadership that you've shown as we explore this idea and work hard to move it forward at a pace that can draw a majority of support necessary. Thank you. You've done a great job. Mr. McAllister.
Madam Co-Chair, esteemed legislators, members of the public. For the record, my name is Chris McAllister, and I'm from Lane County. I'm a patient, yes. I'm also a caregiver and a nonprofit grower. I apologize if my last testimony was too abrasive. Business interests demanding fair from the system at the cost of those providing what our system has been absent pained me. I have yet to been able to make even, much less a living, while my patient load grows, with growers seeking profits, leaving their former charges behind for the opportunity in Viceland. That being said, the legislated idea that Senate Bill 307 creates a safe place to partake if inhaled only seems counter to most of the medical direction or suggestion in regards to safe or preferred use of cannabis. I propose a carve-out allowing a safe place, medical access repository institutions, or MARIs for short, where carded individuals can go to partake in a recommended manner, whether dropped off and picked up, delivered by medical transport, or have items prepared legally and delivered to infirm individuals without reduction of their rights as medical cannabis patients, a participant in Oregon's medical health programs, or as citizens of the state of Oregon. This is to help bring the proposed law into further compliance with Article 1, Section 20 of our state constitution by allowing further access to qualifying citizens in the pursuit of their health with transfusion centers, elements of the hospice program, homeless kitchens, and pharmacy delivery systems currently in place as examples. As a patient who has been given the wrong meds with wrong doses by pharmacy, a pair of doctors, and the transfusion center, and then told to drive home, I am very much aware of the items that are or are not in play in our system. As a patient who has been, or I feel that by expanding access to safe places, knowledge-based programming, and observant staffing, we aim to affect the items that have plagued our communities, both in regards to reducing indirect effects of experimental medication, easing liabilities to communities, and setting a clear model of medicinal use over recreational goals with these centers. I thank you for your time and your service, and I know this has not been an easy road. So thank you.
Thanks so much. Any comments for this, questions for this panel? All right, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes, please.
For Mr. Chapman, there was a dimension that was discussed. You touched on it in your testimony. Could you put on the record the reasons people might not be able to use cannabis in their own homes?
Yes, absolutely. Co-chairs, Senator Farioli, one of the many reasons, I'm also a, I don't say it very often, I'm also a licensed real estate broker, and I look at leases all day long, and I have yet to run into a lease that allows anyone to consume cannabis in their home. So we're talking about tenants in general. We're talking about people that may live in government-assisted housing, Section 8. And once we start talking about Section 8, we start talking about the disproportionate effects that can have on people of color and people of low income. There were studies that were mentioned. I try not to repeat things that were said last testimony, but there are two studies, one out of Seattle and one out of Denver, showing that the disproportionate arrests of possession and consumption of cannabis are still there for people of color. And I think that, you know, while there's plenty of celebration to be had about legal cannabis and Measure 91 passing and a lot of the great work the legislators done, this is an unanswered problem. And I would hope that the committee here would continue to see 307 as an incremental step forward in solving that problem. This is the smallest of many steps that this would take, and I think deserves serious consideration. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up?
I do, Madam Chair.
Well, then, go right ahead, and then after you, Senator Przanski.
We heard during our work group, and we had a couple of sessions, from Mr. Jesse Horton, who is the president of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, MCBA. And he was quite articulate about the very real limitations people feel that may not be that may not have been considered had it not been for the suggestion of cannabis lounges. So part of the issue was Section 8 housing, assisted living facilities, any number of government program assisted living facilities, housing that has no smoking CCRs, people who find that the use of cannabis is legal in Oregon, but something you can't do on the street, in a park, in your car, with this particularly around children. So the lounge isn't perhaps as radical a step as people might think. I do understand for the chiefs of police and the sheriff's association that they do have an additional challenge with people using intoxicants, which is not a greater challenge than they have today. The argument that people will congregate in these venues, become impaired, and boil out of the smoke and into the car is certainly a terrifying image, but I'm not sure that there's much reality to that, since people understand that operating heavy equipment and automobiles while impaired is a surefire, pardon the additional cannabis pun, ticket to an overnight stay at a law enforcement facility near you and a DUI charge. So I get it. I think we've tried to make dollars available to law enforcement in the distribution of tax revenue from cannabis, which is meant to deal with that issue. So I appreciate the sentiment. I understand the challenge, and I wonder if we're willing to take the next step to deal with the challenge on a very limited basis, which is what these venues are designed to produce. If the experience turns out to be a bad experience, then certainly we would take course corrections. But I believe there are other states that have these venues out there. But it was a good work group. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence.
It was very good. All right. Thanks so much. Senator Przanski.
Yeah, and if, Sam, if you could follow up on Senator Farioli's question, besides those that you've named out, I also understand that there is an inability for individuals that are here visiting in the state that could be coming in for economic
that's right.
reasons.
That's right. And it, the tourism factor is not, co-chairs, Senator Przanski, the tourism factor is not to be ignored by any means. It simply has not, it just was not part of the larger discussions within the work group because, unfortunately, that's not where the opposition was coming from. Anyone over the age of 21 that can legally purchase, cultivate cannabis that does not live in their own home has no control. And I guess my number one question is, if this isn't the solution, I'd love to hear what the solution is, because I really think that we'd need one, and I can't think of anything more incremental than what we've got now.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? All right, thanks. And again, great job with all the steps that we've had a chance to take this session to work on this bill. All right, next up, I'm going to call, please, Mike Rocklin and Christine Lewis, and then the final panel for this bill is going to be Stacy Michelson, Rosa Klein, and Pete Kramer.
Now, co-chairs, Joint Committee, Mike LaRocklin. And I wanted to say a couple things. First of all, as a health and safety educator, I'm in favor of anything we can do to help educate the public as well as new people that want to try cannabis. Anything to help improve not only the knowledge but the understanding of how cannabis can be consumed safely is really important. And we're beginning on that, but I think we're a little early on. So this is a great step, small step, but really important for that purpose, to gather people in a social setting that doesn't isolate them. That's really significant. Isolating people is contrary to cannabis use, I think. It's a social meeting. So one of the concerns is this pre-approval that might be happening for cities and counties because of the timeliness of getting event permits and things like that. So if we're talking about events, that's one thing. If we're talking about lounges, another. But if we're talking about events, what we saw with Lux and everything else, things get kind of coagulated, and so that's just a concern I have that needs to be worked through, because having produced events, you're set, and you've got money involved, you've got commitments and all that, and you don't want a roadblock like this. It could really, really hurt, especially nonprofits. And the other thing I want to say was that there are ways. There's old-school ways and new ways that are able to deal with the psychotropic effects of these drugs. One old school way is peppercorn. Makes you think about what you're doing. It really tends to downplay that. Another way is CBD can ameliorate those effects. And there are new products too. So consider that. And if we do pass this, I'm really encouraging you. It's a really good first step for things like edibles that can be countermanded by some of these products. So just because we've heard stories in the past that edibles are an issue doesn't mean we can't educate people. So I would encourage us to look at that really carefully. I'm a little disappointed from a medical standpoint that we can't do edibles, but because we've already done that in Portland, and that turned out to be a success last year, I believe, summer fair. So I would like to say this is great work to get this. Really enjoy the opportunity to have a social setting to educate people so that they can feel safe in what they're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Lewis.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to weigh in tonight in support of Senate Bill 307. Here tonight in support of the Dash 3 amendment was here in fuller force with the City of Portland 2 weeks ago. And the letter from our mayor and Commissioner Udaly, I think, is generally outlining our intent to support legislation like this. The Dash 1s is what we spoke to in the letter, but we're still in support with the Dash 3s. And I'm particularly happy to be here tonight in support of the Dash 3s since the new language has come around because of continued conversations with stakeholders that started and spurred out of the work group. And so we would certainly engage in reasonable regulations on issues discussed, like the proximity to dwelling units, parks, community centers, and so on. So here tonight in support of this bill, still the Dash 3 amendment, and along the lines of what Mr. Chapman was outlining, I think in particular looking at not only folks who can't consume cannabis in their home, but are making an intentional choice not to out of respect for roommates, housemates, children, or whomever else they are living with. So definitely still a tenants issue, but not only about regulations, but also about choice.
Good point. Yes, Co-Chair Burdick.
Thank you. Ms. Lewis, the question came up today because the letter was signed by two councilmen. This does reflect a majority of the city council position. Is that correct?
I don't know if they've taken it up at council. It's signed by the mayor because he's in charge of all the bureaus right now, and Commissioner Udaly traditionally has the bureau in charge of this item. So that's why you've got the two of them together. But I can follow up if they've taken council conversation under advisement.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions, comments for the panel? All right, thank you both so much for being here and offering your perspective. So the final panel for Senate Bill 307 is Stacy Michelson, Rosa Klein, and Pete Kramer. And then we will move forward with House Bill 2198. Go ahead in any order.
Great. Co-Chairs Burdick and Leininger, For the record, I'm Stacey Michelson with the Association of Oregon Counties. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify once again on this bill, focusing today on the Dash 3 amendments. I'm going to preface this by, one, reminding you all that counties have statutory responsibility at the local level as the local public health authority. And from that vein, I also have clearance from the Coalition of Local Health Officials to share their perspective today. They are also in opposition to Senate Bill 307 with the Dash 3 amendments. Moving forward, I want to thank both Senator Farioli and Representative Linear for your work on the work group. I think we had some really great discussions there, and I especially value the proponents' willingness to think really creatively about some ways that they could pursue this legislation while still honoring the Indoor Clean Air Act. And we appreciate the local opt-in language that's included in the bill. You know, that's always important to us. And we do understand the need that some of our communities do have to have some legal ways and processes to regulate the social consumption of cannabis. However, all of that said, we do still have some concerns about Senate Bill 307, even with the Dash 3s. And we can't quite get there yet. Can't quite get to neutral. Still in opposition to the bill. And you know, I think having had the work group only met a few times, we had more questions come up than we felt there were answers. But I want to be clear that we're not trying to just be obstructionist on this bill. We're happy to continue that conversation. And we would fully support an amended Senate Bill 308 that makes clear the intent to talk about social consumption, so long as there is also a public health and public safety and OLCC voice at that table to make sure that we do have agency buy-in as we're talking about some of those regulatory questions. And I do believe that CLO as well has said that they could get to support on 308 in an amended form. But in the interest of time, I'll go over a few quick bullet points of some of the lingering questions and issues that we've had with the Dash 3 amendments on 307. First of all, there is some ambiguity in the way that the bill is crafted with references to the Indoor Clean Air Act. Currently, violations of the Indoor Clean Air Act are regulated by local public health authorities. So even though we're talking about outdoor porches and it's not a violation of the Indoor Clean Air Act, those smoking patios are still regulated under the Indoor Clean Air Act. So it becomes a question of, you know, if it's a venue that is carved out within the Indoor Clean Air Act, does public health then have the authority for regulating those spaces? Is it OLCC? Is it local public safety, who's probably going to get the frontline call if a complaint is lodged? You know, we'd like to see that tightened up in any language and have some further discussions really about who is the appropriate entity to be dealing with complaints of that nature. Further, there's a large concern that nowhere in this bill is there a requirement for a public health perspective to be considered. OLCC has all of the rulemaking authority. There's no onus on them to involve public health in that process of developing the rules. And similarly, there's no requirement for cities to involve their local public health authority in that discussion. And, you know, we value the option and the opportunity for cities to have local control as well, but we also recognize that counties have the statutory responsibility for public health and cities do not. So, you know, we couldn't blame them for not necessarily taking into consideration something that they are not charged with doing. So we want to make sure that it is very clear that public health should have a role in that local discussion and in setting some of those standards. So particularly in Section 3 of the Dash 3s, there's the requirement for applicants to show documentation that they meet local standards around proximity to various buildings, dwellings, childcare facilities, et cetera, visibility to the public. But again, there's no requirement that a city would build that into their local ordinance. So if that has not been part of the local ordinance, you know, an applicant shows up and they just say, well, there's no ordinance for me to show that I comply with, so I have the go-ahead there. And there's nowhere for OLCC to then take that into consideration on their own in the bill and say, well, you know, you're really close to, you know, a public park or a child care facility, but the way the bill is structured, they don't have that purview. So we just want to make sure that there's a space for public health to be involved in establishing public health and safety best practices and standards in a local ordinance or any statewide side boards that would be considered. Additionally, we feel like the bill is still a little bit vague or ambiguous in really specifying that this this would be about outdoor use only. It references the Indoor Clean Air Act, but this particular pieces of the Indoor Clean Air Act that it references don't seem as concrete and crystal clear as we would like to see them. And finally, and this is really, really specifically from the public health perspective of things, is we feel that the bill could go further in addressing youth exposure and access and prevention. Currently, there is no funding dedicated for local work around marijuana prevention the way that we have with tobacco prevention. And so we see that as a challenge for our local communities. Again, if you know a city were to adopt something, then a county is going to be trying to work that into their public health plan and find a way to do some youth outreach the same way that they would around tobacco. But there are no resources dedicated for them to do that work. And I won't belabor the point, but part of that does come from some of the issues we've seen and mentioned previously with the Oregon Healthy Teens Survey around communities where youth tend to see an uptick in their tobacco use based on hookah bars and that sort of thing that exist within the community. So we have concerns about, again, local communities passing things, cities where there may be a public health or a public safety additional, I don't want to say burden, but work for a county to do without additional resources added in. I want to close by restating that we are open to having this conversation in an ongoing way. We would like to continue discussing these questions during the interim because we recognize this is an issue that's going to come back. We're not just saying we don't want to do this, but there was not time this session to address all of these questions. Even within the Indoor Clean Air Act pieces, we've had disagreements among public health folks around how do we best craft that language. As much as we've tried to sit down and find a place that we could get to neutral, it brought up more questions than it did answers. So I would advocate for having a discussion around 308 and just want to reaffirm our opposition to 307, even with the dash threes.
Thank you Thank you for all the good conversation around this. Yes, Ms. Klein.
Thank you. And I'll keep my remarks brief because Stacy really outlined in detail what some of our remaining questions are. I think the two questions we still have, and we really... my name is Rosa Klein. I'm the Deputy Director of Government Relations for Multnomah County. And we were part of Senator Ferrioli and Representative Leininger's work group. It was a really good faith effort to take into account the concerns that we had around the Indoor Clean Air Act, and the preservation of the Indoor Clean Air Act was really appreciated. And I think the steps that the people in that room took to protect employees and patrons from secondhand smoke were really big. I mean, I think going into it, I don't think there was an understanding that we could get to a place where there was a solution that could include an intact Indoor Clean Air Act, and that is really appreciated. I think that the two issues that we still have are the language that still needs clarification around the enforcement authority. So for violations or for complaints, we feel uncertain about whether or not we would continue to play the role that we do as we do with tobacco in responding to complaints and violations, or whether or not that would be regulated by a different authority. And then the access to youth and youth prevention. So the impact to adolescents as the adults in their lives consume marijuana more regularly and it becomes more socially acceptable is unknown. And we know from what we've seen so far that teens are interested in what the adults in their lives are doing, and they are influenced by those decisions. And as marijuana use becomes more normalized as a recreational activity, we want to be sure that there are sufficient prevention activities going on so that they can make informed choices about what they choose to do in their early adulthood and in their late adolescence, because we know that as the brain develops, it's critical that they get through those late adolescent years before they start to become regular users of any addictive substance. So what we'd like to see is further conversation. We're firmly at the table, and we'd like to see additional attention as this moves forward to youth prevention. And I know there were several bills this session that would have funded local jurisdictions through taxation, and I know that those weren't able to move forward, but that's would be helpful to counties as we're looking at prevention activities and enforcement activities. I'll happily take any questions.
Thank you so much. Any questions? All right, Mr. Kramer.
Thank you. My name's Pete Kramer. I'm from Marion County, Kaiser. I'm a patient, I'm a grower, I'm a concerned citizen. Why are you violating our civil rights in Section 20? We're not being treated equally. I mean, when 91 was passed, you said several times in writing that you would not touch the medical program. Now, this has been several years. We've seen a lot of things over the 15, 20 years that we've been in the program. We've seen the money from the patients go to other departments in the health department. Oh, when 91 passed, oh, we don't have no place to distribute the cannabis to the regular people. Can you help us out? Okay. And now you took them over. I mean, the patients are being hurt. For a place for safe consumption for the people that can enjoy cannabis in their own home, and they can socialize with other cannabis users, and they're regulated or watched, and if they see that they're over-intoxicated, you stay over in this section for a while. I think it's a good idea, but the patient is being hurt.
Thank you. All right.
Madam Chair, this is for Rosa and Stacy, Ms. Klein and Ms. Mickelson. Thank you for participating. It's the most gently hostile testimony I've ever heard. But I don't know that any bill can deal with the issue of inhalation, you know, and as a public health issue, I get it. There's no upside to inhalation of any combusted material. So we get that part. But the idea that that would be something that's on a direct collision course with the Clean Indoor Air Act, that's simply not the case. The idea that this is an ambiguous, or who does the enforcement is ambiguous, I think is disingenuous. We are allowing cities to have the authority if they choose to opt in. So, you know, cities and counties regularly make agreements for law enforcement. Jurisdictional issues are ironed out between different geopolitical boundaries. So, you know, I'm not sure if we met forever we'd ever close on all the objections that you have to cannabis use, because it isn't really, the objections are to cannabis use. So, you know, I don't think we're here to fight 97 over again. That was decided by the citizens. We're here to end prohibition. And the idea that you have a fully legal action that could be taken by citizens of Oregon and no venue to do that puts governments in a very awkward position. And the concern that we all heard expressed by people is that we have a disproportionate population in our incarcerated over this issue, and the people who are disproportionately affected are poor and minority. So without some mechanism to deal with that, I think we're not doing the thing that we were supposed to do, which is try to end prohibition. I don't think you're considering the negative effects on poor and minority citizens as a public health issue. So go chew on that for a while. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, with that, okay. I will thank you and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 307.
No kidding.
You can go ahead and have your seats. And now we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2198 and invite forward our good friend and colleague, oh, goodness, if he's in the room still, Mr. Mark Mayer. There he is. And as he's coming to the front, I just want to note that today is Mr. Mayer's last day after valiantly serving our cannabis committee for getting close to 3 years now. So,
But wait. We have until tomorrow.
Wait. Never scratch all of those positive comments. We have him until tomorrow. So we're going to launch into two work sessions after this, but I'm hoping that you'll stick around so that at the end of the work sessions part, we can each, let you know what's really on our minds. Because
he has other plans. he'll be tuning in on the
That's right. But before we break into that, if you could please orient us on House Bill 2198, the -33 amendment is the part that is under consideration right now.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I went over the -33s in full last week, so I think I'll just hit the high notes here and briefly mention what's up for your consideration. The -33 amendments, they create a Oregon Cannabis Commission. That commission's duties in this bill are to decide what kind of governmental framework there should be for the Oregon medical marijuana program moving forward, and it requires a report to be submitted by next short session. The -33 amendments, they also allow medical marijuana grow sites to sell into the Oregon Liquor Control Commission system 20 pounds of marijuana a year, so long as they meet certain criteria. They have to be of a certain size, they have to be registered by a certain date. And I do want to mention real quickly, for the other amendments that are posted on OLIS, like the 34s and the 36s, et cetera, this is the only portion of House Bill 2198-33s that changes, is different variations on this theme of who can sell 20 pounds in and who cannot. They kind of, for lack of a better term, roll back slightly some of the immature marijuana plant count, immature marijuana plant caps set in Senate Bill 1057 and which are now law. And by roll it back, basically what I mean is specifically for the designated grow sites, it specifies that those immature marijuana plants that are subject to the cap, which is two immature marijuana plants for every mature marijuana plant, have to be 24 inches or more in height. And again, the idea was that these guys are going to be tracked like the Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensees, and therefore those licensees, they have trays of sprouts, and those trays are tracked. And so the idea is here that these medical marijuana grow sites will be subject to a similar type tracking system. Really, a lot of the other amendments are very technical in nature. I'd be happy to answer any questions about them, but we did go over them last week. So. Those are the main points of House Bill 2198.
Thank you, Mr. Mayer. I want to note some contextual information. When we worked Senate Bill 1057 last week or a week before that, one of the things that Co-Chair Burdick and I noted was that for people who were feeling concerned about the impacts of Senate Bill 1057 on medical producers, that we would continue, including some of our colleagues on the committee who needed to vote no on that bill, we would continue working in good faith to try to make sure that we developed some plans to help assist producers in the medical space to have opportunities moving forward as the adult use market continues to be really dynamic and people who are in this market deal with all of the changes that are happening, including patients. And so within House Bill 2198-33, there is a provision to develop the Cannabis Commission to develop some additional input and new way of providing stakeholder perspective under the OHA that was developed by by peers on our committee who were the people who expressed concerns before. And also there's a provision to allow medical registrants to sell up to 20 pounds into the OLCC system, provided the product is tracked seed to sale and otherwise satisfies those requirements. So this was our good faith effort to try to address the thing that we said that we would do last time we worked on a bill. And I'm glad that it's gotten to where it is. It's probably not everybody's perfect version, but it's a really good faith effort to try to deal with it. We have a fiscal impact statement developed by the Oregon Health Authority that ascribes a $351,000 cost to, I believe it's to implementation of the Oregon Medical Cannabis Commission. And because of that, after we work the bill today, if we have enough votes to move it forward, it's going to be moved down to the Ways and Means Committee, where there's going to be some real assessment of whether $351,000 is a fair and accurate representation of what the cost would actually be to the agency in staffing this commission. I think there are a lot of minds who would perceive that seems like a high estimate, if you will. And so with that, we can have comments, questions for Mr. Mayor. Senator Przanski, I think you had some comments that you wanted to make, and we could invite forward folks from the health authority at that point.
Definitely like to have them come up. But I will say this to the co-chairs. I appreciate the work that's been done on the Dash 33s. I will be supporting them, knowing two things. Number one, the Dash 34s and the Dash 36s that came out today were not able to, take care of the issues that the co-chairs have brought forward as to some of the participants in this process and the industry have with it. It's unfortunate we don't have the paperwork on some of those so we could actually maybe have more vivid discussions on it. But I'm here at this point knowing that there's a point of where there's good in 33 that needs to move forward for the medical side. I do believe that it does, in fact, shortchange what we know at this point is from all of the testimony, because of the recreational movement, many people who were in the medical side as growers have left the medical side, have gone in the recreational side. We've got plenty of testimony that have said that because of that, many patients are suffering because they're having difficulty or not able to find growers. And so one of the visions that myself and others in a smaller work group had was that we were going to do our best to try to help facilitate new individuals who might want to get in there and provide medicine to medical patients and still have the opportunity in the future, as the Dash 36s would have allowed for, is for a medical grower, a new medical grower who was not caught with the grandfathering in, to be able to sell into the rec market, that they would have that opportunity after a year of after being licensing. And that would allow for the market to fluctuate, move, and stabilize. And then what we have to keep in mind, both 34s and the 36s, and I believe the 33s as well, have in there is that OLCC has the gate. They have the control on the valve. They have the ability at OLCC, without any mention of what we think or what we want to do, to decrease the amount of flow and production based on the saturation of what the markets are. So we always had that as a safeguard. The other second safeguard in the 34s and 36s were that you have to have, for a medical grower to be able to sell into the retail market, a willing wholesale licensee on the OLCC side or a processor on OLCC on the recreational side who were willing to purchase any of the product that was being offered for sale. And so there's multiple ways of how it was still not a cakewalk for those people in the medical grow to be able to sell up to 20 pounds, if they even had up to 20 pounds to sell. Now we have an opportunity to still move forward with two important parts, the commission, as well as the ability for at least those who are in the program now to be able to make ends meet and be able to still stay on the medical side and be able to provide for patients, where many have already made that change to go forward. So I definitely would love to have the Department of Health authority to come up and give us a little enlightenment as to how they came up with the $351,000 figure for their part of this bill.
Excellent. And since we've got Mr. Mayor at the table at the moment, are there any additional thoughts, legal questions as to the bill, and then we'll move forward into the question about the fiscal and what the order that was? No? None right now. Okay, great.
Chair Leininger, may I mention one thing? Because
sure.
Talking to Jesse Sweet from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, he asked me if I would mention something on the record, and that's how this bill works in conjunction with Senate Bill 1057 with regard to the tracking requirement for the 20 pounds. Is that okay?
Please.
All right. This bill and this material was written before Senate Bill 1057 became law. So this bill does not contemplate anything other than the marijuana, the 20 pounds, being tracked that's entering the system. With Senate Bill 1057 having become law, everybody who is going to be selling into the system the way that this is written will be tracked, period. So he just wanted me to make sure that that was mentioned so that it is clear this does not just require tracking for the transfer. Because of Senate Bill 1057, it's also going to require tracking of all registrant activities.
All right. Yes, please, Senator Podolsky.
And my understanding, Mark, that the Dash 33s, will it not require additional security requirements on those marijuana growers, meaning the medical?
Chairs Leininger, Chairs Burdick, Senator Podolsky, no, the Dash 33 specifically prohibit the imposition of additional security measures that would be adopted in conjunction with any rule adopted for purposes of tracking. So they say the passage of that law does not allow for the imposition of additional security measures.
All right, so just for clarification, I want to make sure that's on the record, the 1057 is not going to revert those growers into a more harsh setting of security.
That is correct. If this amendment as written passed, that would be correct.
Thank you. So, Mr. Orso, could you please help us understand how the agency concluded that it would cost $351,000 to undertake this work?
Sure. For the record, Andre Uso, manager of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. Representative Leininger, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. I believe it's $350,000 per biennium, so it's over 2 years. It's to staff, so the bill asks for staff support for the commission. It's a 9-member commission that meets once a month. There will be travel reimbursement involved there, so some of the costs are associated with reimbursing travel, which would be reasonable under those circumstances of meeting once a month. In addition, I think we asked for about 1.5 FTE to provide the staff support. One full FTE would be administrative, since this is a commission that meets once a month and has quite a bit of specific directives and mandates from the legislature to look at strategic plans, advice to the agency. I think one administrative staff is probably realistic and reasonable there. And then another half FTE for operations and policy analyst. And they would be the person probably authoring a lot of these strategic plans and getting into the policy work. So, you know, the number off the top of someone's head does seem high, but I think if you look at the logistical and administrative staff support that this commission would need, that would meet 12 times a year, I think it's a reasonable number.
Senator Podolsky.
All right. So, Andre, if you're correct as to what you said were the breakdown for the FTE, then that should change the number here, because the way it's written up, it says one FTE would be the analyst, half-time would be for the admin specialist. So if that's the case, okay. It seems like we should be getting the number down just as we talk.
Sure, and I can confirm whether I have it backwards or if the what's written down is backwards. So I'll have to get back to you. So I'm not sure if it's one full FTE for the analyst or one full for the administrative person.
Please, yes.
So can you tell – I'm just not sure how much people are getting paid these days in these positions. It'd be nice to know what they would be coming in, because those are ones. Yeah. I assume those are newbies. Those are level one versus someone that's higher up. And then also, I guess, the services and supplies, it says $120,000, $58,616 is for meeting expenses. So that just seems a little bit on the high side for, I'm not sure where they're meeting. I assume they're meeting somewhere in a conference room. They're not meeting in a hotel room.
Sorry, if I may, Senator Przanski. Meetings, we would hope they would be in Portland State Office Building as much as possible. But if we do have members from areas of the state that are outside of the metro area, we do want to be equitable in how people travel throughout the year. So we may have meetings in other parts of the state related to travel reimbursement. Gas isn't cheap these days.
$60,000 worth?
I mean, I could look at the cost of reimbursement for an ACMM meeting that's not in Portland, or for those members to get to Portland, and then our reimbursement rates for that. So they're probably based off that. And I know that those members aren't staying in the Ritz-Carlton or anything like that.
One last question.
Yes, please, and then we'll go to Representative Wilson, and then I'm hoping that Senator Cruz has a comment, because I'm sure I'd be really interested to hear it if you did.
So what is the position of OMMP as it pertains to the creation of a commission that you said that y'all didn't really want to be part of?
Senator Brzezinski, pardon me.
Is OMMP still frustrated that the legislature has found itself wanting to create a commission and actually set aside it in OHA?
I don't think OMMP has a tone or an attitude towards a piece of legislation. I mean, we're just a regulatory body. I think personally all my staff that work for me believe in the mission of the OMMP and are proud to work for the OMMP. So I don't really quite know how to answer your question.
Did you have a follow-up comment you wanted to make?
I'll let others go forward and
all
come
right.
back.
Representative Wilson and then Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Andre, I'm not trying to be a wise guy here. I'm just coming out of an atmosphere where I'm a private business person that has a couple of radio stations and 20 employees. And quite often when we're presented an opportunity to do something, we just have to, well, not quite often, all the time, we just have to suck it up and do what we have to do with the limited resources that we have. So I guess my question would be, as we look to your agency, is it inconceivable that you guys are unable to suck it up with the number of people that you have? Is everybody just absolutely maxed out? Nobody's sitting around? There's just no way of taking care of this without another person and a half or so.
Representative Wilson, I don't think it's inconceivable. And I think that if circumstances were different, if we knew the amount of revenue that we're going to get in through patient fees, that maybe we'd be in a different position where we could suck it up and take on those additional duties. Right now, my staff and myself, we're stretched pretty thin. We run a registry program, and we regulate dispensaries and processors. But we've been tasked to write rules, testing, labeling. I mean, all that takes time and manpower, and those people are paid for the work that they do. So, I guess to answer your question, it would depend on the circumstances and the revenue that we could get in. And at the pace that we're losing patients now, I don't know.
Senator Cruz.
So how many people in the Oregon Health Authority are dealing with marijuana in one form or another?
I think I have about 46 staff right now, and that includes myself.
Okay, and that's also, and you've had oversight over the committee that's been operating all this time on the medical side, correct?
The ACMM, yes, sir, that's correct. Yes.
Okay, I and they meet how often?
They meet four times a year.
So we're increasing the number of meetings, obviously, but I'm assuming the commission's replacing that group. So you're just changing the groups that you're having oversight over. And I would also suggest that the way that this is structured, you're not creating policy. you know, what is being created is recommendations to come back to the legislature. So this isn't a policy. It's not like you are being asked to do anything other than what's in the bill, because the way the bill is structured, the recommendations come back to the legislature for action before you would be tasked with doing anything different. Isn't that the way you're reading it? Because that's the way the bill is.
Senator Cruz, you know, I don't think it's fair to characterize it as that simple. I think that there is a lot of commitment and time for a policy analyst to sit down with these commission members, to explain to them the law, to explain to them to the rules, to guide them through the process of the reports that they have to be, that have to be written. I'm thinking that the commissioners probably aren't going to write these reports. It's going to be a staff member that writes them. I think there's just a lot more involvement in running a organization like this than it's just not that simple, sir.
It may not be that simple. Just one more thing is because the committee that you had jurisdiction over before was advising you on policy that you were creating, and this one is
opposite.
Is totally the opposite, because any policy decisions come back here, not for the agency to write the rules on. So that's a completely different dynamic.
I understand what you're trying to say. Thank you.
Co-Chair Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having served on a commission before, 12 times a year is quite a few meetings, and If that number were cut down, would that make a difference in the fiscal, or would it make a significant difference?
Senator Burdick, it would. It would cut down on the amount of administrative work that would be needed. And if I could add, the 1.5 FTE request is based upon we're anticipating losing staff because of the effect of 1057. And if we lose growers and we lose patients, that means we lose fee revenue to run a program and to pay staff. So we're probably looking at less staff 2 years down the road.
Did you have a follow-up?
No.
Senator Pulaski.
So right now there's $18 million that's coming off of patients that's being diverted to other programs in OHA. $18 million. So I'm really puzzled how there's not enough money in the system to pay for this if we actually had to pay for it. Any help with that?
Those appropriation questions, I can't answer those.
And then the other question that Senator Cruz asked, how much is it actually costing now for the advisory group that we've had that's been meeting for 4 times a year, and what it actually costs for that service? Knowing that I know OMMP is supposed to have had a more active role in there as compared to what this commission would be doing. It seems like it would help us to understand how this numbers materialize and why $18 million that's already coming in off the patients can't be some of it diverted to cover the cost, the true cost of this program.
Senator Brzezinski, I can get back to you with the numbers that it costs us on an annual basis to support the ACM and to reimburse their travel and administrative costs.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I think that gives you a strong sense that this group is pretty concerned and skeptical of the fiscal that's been attributed to the body of work related to the Cannabis Commission. Any other comments for... Mr. Urso? Okay, thank you so much for coming forward. And so nonetheless, notwithstanding our concern and skepticism about the cost that's been attributed to this, it has been attributed by the agency, and as a result, we have direction that we need to refer the bill to the Ways and Means Committee, where it's certainly possible that members of this committee will share our concern about the fact that it seems like costs that are much higher than may sometimes be attributed to functions such as these have been attached here.
But nonetheless, there's a lot of great work in House Bill 2198-33 amendments. The commission, the £20 a year sell over opportunity, some clarification of the kind of address that enables one to be qualified to be a registrant in the OHA system, and some additional pieces. So with that, I would welcome a motion from my vice chair regarding the bill, and starting with the Dash 33 amendments, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Leininger. I move to adopt the Dash 33 amendments dated May 23rd, 2017.
Co-Vice Chair Wilson moves to adopt the Dash 33 amendments dated May 23rd, 2017. Is there any discussion? Senator Prezonsky.
Madam Chair, I will be supporting the Dash 33s. As I said, I'd love to have had the opportunity to support the Dash 34s or the Dash 36s for the reasons stated already, but I think it's worth putting on the record again that it would, in fact, give those individuals who wanted to come in as medical growers to supplement and actually take the places of others that have left to go to recreational an opportunity to be able to have sometime in the future, at least a year out from their registration, to be able to try to sell into the rec market. Again, that would not be a direct sell to a rec outlet. It had to go to a wholesaler or a processor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Co-Chair Leininger, I move House Bill 2198 do pass as amended and that a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be added.
Co-Vice Chair Wilson moves House Bill 2198 as amended with a do pass recommendation and that a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be added. Is there any discussion? Yes, sir. Senator Farioli and then Senator Cruz.
Well, Madam Chair, I heard the previous testimony that the agency could use existing resources if pressed.
Ways and Means question.
So the question about the referral to Ways and Means may already be moot, Madam Chair. So this is the place where you quote the good, the bad, no, the Dirty Harry movie and say, well, do you feel lucky, punk? Say, if you strip the referral and pass the bill, the agency does have to provide the services with the existing resources that it has. I think that may be where you were going, Senator, just a procedural question, Madam Chair.
So I appreciate that comment. I think the record that the agency established during this testimony indicating that it would be possible to absorb that will be useful for reference at the Ways and Means Committee. But I feel like at this point, my instinct, I'd love to hear input from other members of the committee, but my instinct would be to move forward with the motion as articulated. But I agree with you that that's powerful testimony on the record.
A follow-up question, Madam Chair?
If you must.
Well, just my observation is that many bills that have gone to Ways and Means have so far not emerged from Ways and Means. And, Madam Chair, if it were me, Madam Chair, I'd keep this bill as far away from the Ways and Means process as I possibly could.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And we have Senator Cruz had a comment, and then Co-Chair Burdick had a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I find the fiscal on this bill highly suspicious. Having said that, I am supportive of it. Same position as Senator Prezonsky. I would have liked to have seen maybe a little higher number in the 30s, but I will support the 33s. And Madam Co-Chair, both co-chairs. Senator Farioli's right. Things do disappear in Ways and Means, but I have a feeling that we have a commitment here and we will make sure this bill is not one of those that disappears in Ways and Means. And so I'm putting my faith in the leadership of this committee to make sure that we get what we all want, and that's for this bill to come to the floor in both chambers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate that. Co-Chair Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also would prefer this bill not go to Ways and Means, but I think we would probably blow up the building if we tried to stop it at this point. So I think the committee needs to engage in the Ways and Means process. And I really see no scenario where this is not going to come out of Ways and Means.
No right. pressure, Madam Co-Chairs.
Thank you. Co-Vice Chair Wilson. I'm sorry.
We got the motion on the table, right?
But I think we're having discussion on the motion. Okay. So did you have a
Only briefly, I wanted to thank both co-chairs for giving us the opportunity with 2198. Frankly, when we were when we malcontents were given this to play with, I thought we were just given a shiny object to occupy our time for a while, and then we'd get kicked off the farm. But you stuck with it, and you kept with your commitment to let us do something with it. So thank you. That buoys my thoughts about this process some, and it can stand to be buoyed now. So thank you. Thank you very much.
It does create an encore project for the Joint Committee as we storm the Ways and Means process. Any further comments? Senator Prezanski.
So I wonder if we could put our own little budget note on this bill as it goes down to Ways and Means and just make sure they know OHA's already pretty well said that they can suck it up and take it on.
All right, let the record reflect that as a budget note. All right, so we have a motion to move the bill forward. We've had discussion. Is there any objection, Representative Olson?
Yeah, so Madam Chair, we've been at this for 2.5 years now, roughly, and I have been extremely supportive and tried to be engaged with everything that we do in this committee. And I think that we've created some really good policy over the years, struggling really, really hard with where we're at right now with this bill. So I'm going to be a no.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and have a call the roll, please.
Senator Meyer?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Fahey?
Aye.
Senator
Perry. Aye.
Senator Prezanski.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Burdick.
Aye.
Co-Chair Leiter.
Aye. All right. With that, the motion passes, and we'll close the work session. Thank you, everybody, for your work on that. And then, as if that were not enough, we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1015. Invite forward Mr. Mayor on what is not his final day, but rather his penultimate day.
Yeah, I love that
penultimate's
word.
A good word.
Which you don't get to say very often. Welcome. Could you please help us walk through the dash four amendment?
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. The Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 1015, we discussed them last week, and I presented them last week. They're really pretty simple. They allow industrial hemp growers and handlers to sell into the Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensed system industrial hemp concentrates and extracts. Then those products can be processed into other industrial hemp products and commodities, or they can be used to subsidize the processing of marijuana items. The original concept allowed these sales to both flow into the OLCC system and then back out. This amendment is a sale into system only. So once the products are sold by the industrial hemp growers and handlers into the OLCC system, then they stay in the system until they're sold by a retailer. And that's the dash four.
Excellent. Thank you. And my co-vice chair, Rep. Wilson, here has been involved with our hemp work over the last several years. I wanted to invite you to make any comments that you'd like on this.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I want to thank Senator Prezanski for work on this long before I got here, and maybe some others as well. And forgive me if I don't mention names. But we've been working like crazy for a couple of years to get an industrial hemp program up and running, something respectable and good and that can become yet another cash crop for the state of Oregon. And so I just want to thank you for following along. This is just one of the panoply of bills that we have to try to make this all it could be, the industrial hemp process in the state of Oregon. Like a number of luckless individuals, I have two bills in Ways and Means as well that are critical to industrial hemp and where we want to go. House Bill 2371, a pilot research program, certification of ag seed. I mean, the whole thing, you know, we really need it, and it's in Ways and Means. It's House Bill 2371 and also 2372 that establishes an industrial hemp commission. So if we could get all of this through, we'd have something that we could really be proud of and know that all of Oregon, and rural Oregon especially, has another opportunity to win. And those opportunities don't come along very often. So with that said, I'd just like to thank all of you for your work and your help. And perhaps we can make this happen.
All right.
Hope so.
Thank you. Now, Senator Posansky, Senator Farioli, I know this is a bill that you initially submitted and that Senator Cruz and Senator Posansky and I think Rep. Fahey all worked together on a work group. I think Rep. Helm might have been involved. No, Rep. Fahey worked on a work group to try to help shape ideas together with Mr. Bovet and others in this larger Courtney Moran, who's been tremendous on the hemp work. But if any of you who were on the work group would like to make comments about this bill or whose bill it initially started out as, that'd be great. No? Senator Farioli, then Senator Posansky.
Well, I'll defer to Senator Posansky.
I want to thank Representative Wilson for taking up this issue, because I know that he has a number of individuals in his constituent area that have approached him about this, and he and I have had the opportunity to talk about the viability for rural Oregon and for individuals in these areas to be able to actually have a livelihood that they can actually stay in their communities or their areas and be functioning, and also being able to bring product to other Oregonians, and I think more so what we're going to see on the interstate commerce as well as on an international level. And I will just say, when myself and Senator Nelson had the bill in 2009, when it actually did pass, it did take a cooperative and bipartisan effort, but I can assure you that he and I never thought we would be here where we are today at this stage of the process to see the industrial hemp movement and really go back to the future and actually move forward in the future in areas and ways that we never even dreamed of. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Success has many parents. This bill was dropped as a constituent bill for a grower who saw that there was some potential. But I would agree with Senator Posansky. Often when you engage many, you find that the vision that began the process pales in comparison with the potential. So.
Nice. Any other comments on this? All right, then I would welcome a motion, please.
Thank you. Co-Chair Leininger, I move to adopt the -4 amendments dated May 16, 2017.
Co-Vice Chair Wilson moves to adopt the -4 amendments dated May 16, 2017. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes.
Co-Chair Leininger, I move Senate Bill 1015 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Wilson moves Senate Bill 1015 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, sir.
Question. You mean OHA didn't put a massive fiscal on this one?
Let's check. Yep, I think we're all set.
Cheap shot.
Why not?
Why not?
Any other discussion?
Fiscal was a cheap shot. So.
All right. Any objection?
Agency.
Seeing none, the motion passes unanimously. That's fantastic. So we need a Senate side carrier, and I would like to suggest that Representative Wilson carry on the House side.
And Senator Posansky will carry on the Senate side.
Yes. Excellent. Fantastic. All right. So, colleagues, this brings us to the part of our meeting where we get to thank Mr. Mayor for tremendous work that he's done over the last 2.5 years. And, you know, really, when you came to this body of law, we were we were all sort of struggling to find our way forward, and none of the, you know, probably 50 or so people who've worked together really closely over the last 2.5 years really knew each other well or in this context, and you've helped us create a cohesive team that's had some good steps, had some stutter steps, and in general, I think, has hopefully created some positive economic opportunity and individual opportunity for people in the state. So thank you. And I wanted to invite my colleagues, if you'd like to add any comments, to speak up. Yes,
thank
please.
You, Madam Chair. It brings back memories of draft 37 to whatever bill we were talking to that comes across the email at 4 o'clock in the morning. This was a 24/7 operation, and I don't know how you ever found time to do everything you did for the Marijuana Committee, plus all the other heavy lifting you had to do. And I hope I'm not speaking out of school, but it is my understanding that you chose your vacation destination to be as far away from Salem, Oregon, as you could manage.
Chair Murdoch, burrow a hole through the globe. And
anyway, I can't tell you how much we appreciate. We literally could not have done it without you. So thank you.
Any of my peers, Senator Przanski, then Senator Cruz, please.
Yeah, Mark, thank you very much for everything. You know, the reality, as the emails continue, you'll probably see another one from me before you leave tomorrow. The other is that
Siege
will be one. I think the other thing is really, as you've heard from others, without your assistance and your focus and ability to understand and grasp what each of us are attempting to say and try to do and get it into the legalese for bills is amazing. And if there's any way that we could convince you to stay another month, we would do it. Understand that's not the case, so safe travels.
Mark, there have been some outstanding lawyers in that room down there, but I put you right at the very top of everyone that I've worked with over 20 years in this building. With your intelligence and your integrity, you are a superstar, and I know you will do well with whatever you choose to do in your life, but you will be missed.
That's very kind. That's nice. Yes, please.
Mark, I look forward to hanging the work relationship up on a peg and developing a new one, just simply call friend. And you are that. And I thank you for all the help that you rendered me along the way. I didn't know what I was doing most of the time. A little bit better, but not much. And I just want to thank you for doing everything you did. You made a great difference for Oregon, and you made a great difference for rural Oregon especially. And we really thank you for that. So I appreciate it. So looking forward to being friends in the future.
All right. Friends, any other?
Yeah, throwing my two bits. I mean, you do look like you've changed over the last 2.5 years. I mean, you've gotten older looking. And Senator Cruz was talking about, I'm glad he's leaving. But, you have been. I greatly appreciate all the work and the effort you've done. And, I mean, I think we all feel that way. You've been, gosh, I don't know how many times you've been up in my office when I was up on the fourth floor eating my candy and seeking counseling for mental health treatment and that kind of stuff. But you have, you know, honestly, you've done an outstanding job. And I greatly appreciate all the effort you've put into it. And again, you know, I mean, the term integrity was thrown into it. And clearly, you're there.
That's nice.
So, thank you.
Hey, would the chairs indulge me for just a second?
Yes, but I just want to note that Representative Helm also wants to make a comment. So
right,
if you'd like
ahead.
To be a cleanup batter.
Mark, thanks. Thanks for some of those late nights, thinking through some difficult questions, sometimes with scotch. Us lawyers often think we know the answer before our clients do, and are somewhat hesitant to let the client think through different problems and come up with solutions. I've appreciated being your client very much because with me and others that we've worked with, you didn't pretend to know the answer before we did. And that open-mindedness led to creativity in some of the legislation that you crafted. And 2198 is the latest example. So thank you for that. Excellent work.
All right. Well,
would the chairs indulge me for now? You realize you had one last chance for a conceptual amendment tonight. And then that would have been an amendment to an amendment, an amendment to an amendment to an amendment. I was joking with Mr. Bavette in the back about 2015 and what everybody went through during that year. That was a really hard legislative session. I think even if I were to stay through this session and the next one, eventually I'd have to go do something else because I don't think anything's going to ever compare to what this committee did in 2015 with respect to the amount of policy it decided on and the bills that came out of that. And so I want to thank you. It was the height of my professional career, and I'll miss all of you.
That is very kind. Thank you so much. All right. Well, then, so with that committee, we probably have one more meeting, and you can have a seat, and we'll be seeing you in just a few minutes. But you're welcome to excuse. You're welcome to go have a seat somewhere. I think there's a good chance we have one more committee meeting. We are intending to consider Senate Bill 56 and House Bill 2197, the Indian tax bill. But I wanted to flag for the community of people who are engaged in this work that we are reaching the finish point of our work together this session. But it's been great, and we have time for all sorts of conceptual amendments still, as Mr. Mayor said. So with that, meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.